For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So tonight we have the pleasure of having our friend Adam give Sangha talk tonight. Adam's on our board and longtime practitioner. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, Tygon, for asking me to speak tonight. I was just thinking as we were sitting how the moment-by-moment experience changes so much when you know you're getting to ready to address a group of people. But I appreciate being put on the spot because sometimes it reminds me in a different way what it is to be alive. I have been practicing, as Tygon said, for a little while now at different centers and had the opportunity to hear Dharma talks and way-seeking mind talks. And I always wondered when would be my opportunity to speak. And so tonight is it. I also want to take this time to thank the Ancient Dragon Sangha and members. I started researching online when I was living in the Lincoln Park area for Zen groups, and I was pleasantly surprised to learn that there was one right down the street from where I work. At the time, this group was at the Seneca Retreat Center on Fullerton. And I worked right up the street, and it was great for me to learn that there was this group here, because the Suzuki Roshi spirit of practice is very important to me, and it started in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and the members there had the same way of gently encouraging me and allowing me the time and space to discover practice in my own way. There was never someone saying, you know, you really should do more, or it's time for you to come back, or it's time for you to put some cash in that, you know, Donna. And I never forgot that. And then I moved from there to the San Francisco Zen Center and Tassajara, and I noticed the same spirit there, especially where the practice was offered to people that were coming and going from the center. So I want to thank the Sangha of Ancient Dragon for their support throughout the last few years that I've been sitting with this group. The topic or question that I want to explore with everyone is an ongoing challenge in my practice, and that is the challenge of taking on this practice physically. Specifically, the Zazen posture or sitting, and how that relates to the rest of my life and my physical experience outside of the Zendo. How do I integrate what I learn on the cushion and inside, you know, Zendos and around them into what I do at work and sitting in front of the computer and so forth. And just, I'd like to just give a little history as a way of sharing with you my ongoing experience with that topic or that question. Some of you know that I coach soccer for a living. And before that, I was very involved with playing soccer. Started at a young age for me. My mom put my brother and myself in soccer. He's a couple years older than me. And I had to do everything, absolutely everything, that he was doing, to his chagrin, I think. And so I followed him out onto the soccer field as well, around the age of 6 or 7. And within a couple few years, really discovered that this was a game that suited me very well. The rules and the structure of it are such that it allows actually quite a bit of freedom and expression of oneself. And then once you get familiar with how to maneuver the ball with your feet, the sky's the limit. So I took it and ran with it, and played through college and a little bit after college, had a brief professional stint. But it was in my teenage years that my body started experiencing difficulty with the demands of athletics, soccer in particular. And at first, these were things that could be dealt with pretty quickly. Maybe a little ice or a wrap or something like that, a few weeks off, and you were back in it. By the time I got to college, though, the injuries were growing, becoming more severe, and ultimately requiring surgery and, you know, medical attention and so forth. This scenario is not uncommon for athletes, you know, that this is something that has ended many a career prematurely. Sometimes they do recover from injuries and go on to play, say, soccer into their 30s. But for me, it really slowed it down considerably in my early 20s. Right about the time I was graduating from college. So I went to the University of North Carolina and had this idea by the time I was a senior that I was going to move to California, Southern California. And it was really the beginning of a journey on many different fronts. One, I began investigating myself and the world with a lot of vigor. At this time, no one was telling me what I had to read or papers I had to turn in, so it was up to me to choose, and it seemed to really take off for me that way. So I headed to California with a friend in a car full of things. Just an anecdote. I remember stopping at the Grand Canyon, and we pulled up next to it, and you kind of look at it and you're like, okay. And then you get back in your car and what are you going to do, right? So I got to California and I really had, you know, this is the first time I'm looking at life with no idea who I am. And I'm in L.A. shortly after they had the Rodney King riots, no less. So it was taking on a lot. But the good news was is that I was soon engrossed in, you know, California sensibilities, some of which are eating healthy. There's vegetarianism. I remember when I was going to California, a friend said, you're going to come back a vegetarian. And sure enough, I did, although I'm not anymore. And then physical practices, new physical practices that I discovered. The first being yoga. I can still remember the first class, and my sister took me to it. She was actually in LA at the time. And I remember trying down dog, and I think my down dog looked more like a push-up down dog because my hamstrings were as tight as anyone's, I'm quite certain. And then I also remember at the end of the class, the corpse pose or savasana, and lying on the floor and thinking, boy, this is spectacular. I don't recall being awake and inside my body and this comfortable in a very long time or ever. It was right around that same time that I had my first meditation experience. Someone had suggested to me, because I was expressing that I was dealing with a lot of anxiety and uncertainty and in transitioning from that I already explained. They said, well, maybe you should try meditation. And I didn't know anything more of it than that. So inside the apartment we lived in, which was right next to the 10 freeway, if you know LA, you know the 10. And I closed the door, sat in a chair, and closed my eyes. And unless I misread the clock, when I opened my eyes, an hour had passed. And that experience definitely resonated with me, but it would take a few years before I would have any sort of consistent sitting practice. Two other things I discovered during my time there, sensory awareness practice, which a lot of Zen Center people are involved with. It was started by a German woman. Her name is Charlotte Silver. And it's a lot of different people that are teachers of this have different methods for how you can teach it. But I practiced with a guy in North Carolina for a couple years, and I just wanted to share what they say about sensory awareness. To strengthen the capacity for authenticity, presence, and responsiveness through the practice of sensory awareness, and thereby contribute to a more caring and connected world. So, finally, took acting classes, some up in San Francisco, but more down in LA. And those of you that have had some experience in acting know that actors are very into their body as an instrument and are always looking for ways to soften the borders of it to the environment and people around them. And so I studied in particular the Meisner method, which one thing that I remember that was probably most interesting for me about it was this thing where it's called repetition. Someone sits there, you sit here, and you just repeat what you observe on that person, and they do the same to you. And it's meant to get you out of your head, out of the sensor, and on that person. And it just goes back and forth and back and forth. The next thing you know, you don't know who's who, which way is up. It's really actually a pretty profound experience. And I thought maybe it could be interesting to combine it or bring it into the Zendo somehow. Just a thought. I want to just refer a few times to what Suzuki Roshi in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, which is a collection of his talks from years ago. What he says just about posture and physicality and some of the things I'm touching on. Here he says, the most important thing in taking the Zazen posture is to keep your spine straight. Your ears and your shoulders should be on one line. Relax your shoulders and push up towards the ceiling with the back of your head, and you should pull your chin in. When your chin is tilted up, you have no strength in your posture. You are probably dreaming. Also, to gain strength in your posture, press your diaphragm down towards your hara, or lower abdomen. This will help you maintain your physical and mental balance. When you try to keep this posture, at first you may find some difficulty breathing naturally, but when you get accustomed to it, you will be able to breathe naturally and deeply. So if you're like me, you've probably noticed that there can be discomfort when you're sitting on a cushion. It doesn't take long before maybe your knee starts talking to you, or your shoulder, or your neck, or your back, or your ankle, or just about any other part of your body. And what I've done since I started practicing is I've gone back and forth between sort of this ferocious appetite for athletic endeavor and coming to sit on the cushion, and then going back to playing soccer, or in later years or in recent years it would become running or going to the gym or the different ways that people, or riding a bike, different ways that people exercise. And for me, it's always been more charged than maybe doing sensible 25 minutes on the Stairmaster with the appropriate warm-up and cool-down. It didn't feel like, you know, it was a workout unless I was, like, ready to black out or something. So I've had to, over time, find a better balance. So sitting and then going back to playing soccer and these other things, and not being able to give up either one. Again, I'd like to, let's see if I have my, something's gone wrong with my filing system here. I just find these points helpful. The most important point is to own your own physical body. If you slump, you will lose yourself. Your mind will be wandering about somewhere else. You will not be in your body. This is not the way. We must exist right here, right now. This is the key point. You must have your own body and mind. Everything should exist in the right place, in the right way. Then there is no problem. If the microphone I use when I speak exists somewhere else, it will not serve its purpose. When we have our body and mind in order, everything else will exist in the right place, in the right way. Sounds easy enough. So, as I was saying, I keep going back. Even now, I play, I coach at a university, and I play with our team pretty regularly. And even like a season or two ago, pushed it too far and damaged my meniscus, and, you know, I had to have that looked at or cleaned up. But there's something about playing that really just keeps me coming back, and maybe sharing a pass with somebody or scoring a goal, which doesn't happen very often these days, but it's a great feeling. And being outside and sweating, and just the collective experience of playing. Recently, I've been reflecting on if I had discovered Zazen or Zen practice earlier and integrated it into my athletic world, would it have made it possible to play longer, because I think I notice now that, and in over the last years, 10 years or so, when I've played off and on, that I think it has improved my performance on the field and my awareness and my balance. There'll be moments in playing when you come back to your breath and you come back to a more reasonable work level. Whereas when I was younger, it was just 100% all the time, and that is not sustainable. So I think about, you know, for me, this is, you know, the question that I'm working with is the challenge of taking this practice physically and what we learn and how does it relate to the rest of our physical life outside of the Zendo. And for everybody, I'm sure it's different. You know, the demands of your work. I know we have therapists in the room, and my mom is one, and I know there's a lot of sitting in that profession, and you know, how does that kind of sitting work with this kind of sitting? So I've discovered that if I limit the amount of high impact athletic activity I do or any, that sitting becomes easier. That my muscles are and bones are more prepared or refreshed for what happens on the cushion. Whereas if I were to play, say, a game this morning and come in and sit, then it would be more difficult and I would enjoy it less. In the 10 years or so that I've been practicing, I've participated in sesshins, and which are intensive periods of sitting, 5 days, 7 days, 3 days, 1 day, and I've tried. I think I've tried everything in terms of how to approach them, using support cushions. Uncrossing my legs, taking a break, recrossing them, sitting in a chair, lying on my back, and I do recommend I do recommend any and all of those practices if you're new to practicing. If you've been doing it for a while, I'm sure you've tried them all. During sesshins, it's interesting to watch the support cushions come in greater and greater demand. We have a pile of them over there in the corner there, and I'm guessing after a few days of sesshin, there might not be so many. And I've also tried sitting every period. I have written here, you know, grinding it out. I don't recommend that. I remember after one sesshin at City Center, it was a 7-day sesshin, and a woman there that's a wonderful practitioner, her name's Vicky Austin, and she's also an Iyengar, highly respected Iyengar yoga teacher. And we had just sat 7 days, and I was miserable. I mean, people would say to me, well, after 3 days, it gets easier, right? And I was just, I know, never did for me. But she said to me, you know, you don't have to be there for every period. And I was, What? Now you're telling me? Really? I don't? You know? I thought, and she said, no, you don't have to be there for every period. So that was news to me. So I guess I've established this practice of going back and forth. And those that are regulars at Ancient Dragon know that Taigen has been very supportive in telling me that, you know, it's not a battle of who sits the longest. It's one of the first things that he said to me when he before he moved to Chicago, but we had the chance to have practice discussion. So I think I've found a way that, and for you, what is sustainable over time? I think that's a good question if you want to continue with the practice. And it's a work, it's always a work in progress that. I just want to end with some more words from Suzuki Roshi, and then be happy to answer any questions that you have or don't have. So try always to keep the right posture, not only when you practice zazen, but in all your activities. Take the right posture when you are driving your car and when you are reading. If you read in a slumped position, you cannot stay awake long. Try. You will discover how important it is to keep the right posture. This is the true teaching. The teaching which is written on paper is not the true teaching. Written teaching is a kind of food for your brain. Of course, it is necessary to take some food for your brain, but it is more important to be yourself by practicing the right way of life. That is why Buddha could not accept the religions existing at his time. He studied many religions, but he was not satisfied with their practices. He could not find the answer in asceticism or in philosophies. He was not interested in some metaphysical existence, but in his own body and mind, here and now. And when he found himself, he found that everything that exists has Buddha nature. That was his enlightenment. Enlightenment is not some good feeling or some particular state of mind. The state of mind that exists when you sit in the right posture is itself enlightenment. If you cannot be satisfied with the state of mind you have in zazen, it means your mind is still wandering about. Our body and mind should not be wobbling or wandering about. In this posture, there is no need to talk about the right state of mind. You already have it. This is the conclusion of Buddhism.
Any comments, responses, questions for Adam? Please feel free.
I'm sort of curious as to whether how you see the relationship between, you know, how you were in your body during your more sort of full-on athletic period and and sitting, I mean, do you find the sort of moment by moment awareness is kind of the same thing, or did you learn something? Were you learning? Do you learn new things about your body and physical being in the world through zazen, or is it? It just is it kind of a further development of what you were already doing?
That's a good. I think I'm constantly learning new things through zazen. It's and how to put it into words, I think, is difficult. What it is I'm learning. Every now and then, I have the feeling, boy, I don't feel sore or anything today, and it's the best feeling. When athletics was my, you know, really my main purpose, it's almost like I had no idea. It's almost like the cognitive process had not even started. I was just out there, you know, whistle would go and you would go. And it's almost like this didn't even switch on until I had to start slowing down from playing. And I think it's something that a lot of athletes deal with. I think this is one of my theories in development, but that they're working out their karma on the playing field. And I think a lot of times there's anger there, but it's the only place they can go to sort of just express themselves and within the rules of that game, you know, you got to abide by a certain number of rules depending on which thing it is. And then you just go home and crash. Then you go back and you do it and you crash. So I think sometimes when I'm sitting, you know, I don't know how it is, but I'm just sort of scanning what's going on, and there'll be some new small opening, like, oh, I didn't know, you know, and then I'll notice the difference in the right and the left side, how they feel. Like, I think my left side is because it was used a lot less in my sport. So it's like a 10-year-old body, and on the right side is maybe, 35 years older than that. Did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciated your talk too. I was thinking while you were talking about how how unpredictable it can be sometimes. You know, you're sitting sometimes and it's just like everything is A-okay, and then other times it's like, you know, what is going wrong here? And I never can totally figure it out. But but this was particularly apt for me tonight because I was noticing during bowing that I was just sort of reflecting on how I remember when we first moved here, and I was just sort of like, oh, there's no way I'm going to feel like dropping my knees on hardwood floor. And had that resistance, and then, you know, so tonight it was just like, all right, you know, okay, no problem. But it's like there's different times where I don't notice it maybe quite so prominently sitting as I do with like a practice like bowing, where, you know, we were at the cenacle, which is a much easier place to bow. There'd be a lot of weeks in a row where I'd just be like, you know, I'll just do a standing bow. I can't do this. And then something gives. And so I was thinking about that in, you know, kind of what you were saying, and like what it says about the quality of mind that's going along with it, that I don't really have any conclusion about, but it maybe kind of points, maybe the physical can somehow, you know, point to what's going on in your mind.
Physical resistance, yeah. Any thoughts on that?
Any thoughts of mine?
Yeah.
On physical resistance?
Yeah, which is, I think, what Nancy's describing.
Yeah.
that's a tough one. I feel like, well, when you started talking, what did you say that you were, tonight you were noticing?
Just the bowing was easier than I thought it would be. You know, and sometimes it's sometimes it just seems a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
For no real reason.
I don't know if I, maybe you want to respond, Tigan. I don't know if I, the way I think is just that, like, when you wake up in the morning, you have a certain amount of freshness, and then it's, and everything you do throughout the day adds up. And then so, you know, like if you spend a whole lot more time that day sending emails, then maybe you'll be sitting and you're across the middle of your back, there's going to be more fatigue and, you know, or if there was a lot of busyness in your day that day, you had to be more out in the city, out and about, how that's going to affect.
Okay.
And always like the minutia and how it adds up.
Yeah.
In terms of, I don't know, physical resistance to bowing, I mean.
Well, I was thinking physical resistance to bowing, but also yeah. Is there an experience of physical resistance where you hold back, say, running or passing or, you know, what on, you know, in your sport, in the activity? Is there some analog there?
I don't know. I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
When you guys were talking about that, I was thinking, I don't even remember where I read this, but some book talking about how teachers can see sort of the state of a person's mind while they're sitting by the posture and how they're doing. So that idea of physical resistance, I mean, I think of sometimes the mental resistance of like, oh, I don't want to do that now. Or, you know, like you're saying, I don't want to bow, and how much of that is the actual pain of bowing and how much of it is in our heads.
I almost wonder too, like the more you talk about going out every day and go, 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 the more you do stuff, the more you want to do stuff, maybe, because that's what you're used to doing, but the more, like the more I don't do stuff, the more I want to not do stuff. Like here, I'm not her, not late, but like, you know, for me, laziness is kind of my thing. I just want to chill, you know, settle and get out there and go, or even bow, because there are times that I'm like, no, bow. But on a different note, I was wondering about when you were younger and going more hardcore, if that would be, like we talk about doing forms of zazen outside, would that be like that? You say you put your whole head goes into it, would that be like being on the cushion here, or would it be...
We've talked about that. I think that is something you don't, it's almost surreal because you don't have any memory of the game. I mean, you're not in a specific way. You, of course, you know the score at the end or whatever, but if someone were to show you a video, you'd be like, wow, that happened or that happened. You don't really remember it. And in the moments, I remember in high school thinking, right now I'm thinking about something later in the day, and it standing out is noticeable. Like, boy, I must not be into this game if I'm in the middle of the field and thinking about something unrelated. So this is not working very much in the sense of putting thoughts, words together into sentences and thoughts during that. For me, it wasn't.
Sometimes athletes talk about being in the zone or being in a space, performing at a very high level for themselves in their particular sports activity. And then there have been comparisons with that and zazen or the kind of quality of presence that we sometimes feel. I don't know if you have any responses to that. I was reminded of it when you were talking about how athletes, you know, have their discipline, but then when they leave the field, when they're finished with the game, then that's all gone. Whereas in zazen, you know, one advantages you can sit anywhere, you know. But I just wondered if you had, if that's it sounded like you were just describing that experience of being really present in the game.
There's no question that there are different levels of performance, and the zone would be the top. And when you're there, it is vast and timeless, and everything seems to be working in balance and coordination, and your awareness is sharp. You can see the player over there, even though your eyes don't, you know that they're there. Mm-hmm. And everything just seems to be working very well. You know, if you're shooting the ball on goal, it goes to the spot you want. Your touch is touch on the ball. Everything is under perfect control. Now, the question I think maybe is there like, can Zazen contribute to an athlete's ability to, I don't know, that's not something that I've really had the opportunity to explore. As I said before, I discovered practice after I was done competing at the high levels.
I was never an athlete. You know, beyond junior high school or whatever, but any kind of competitive sports. But the closest thing in my own experience to sort of what you're describing was I worked for a number of years as a bicycle messenger in Seattle, and was quite put a lot of heart into it. You know, really, you know, so I was always moving fast through, you know, potentially dangerous situations. And what it seemed to call forth, and at this point I was already sitting. You know, there's this particular quality, like you're talking about, you don't use your eyes, but you start to develop a sense where you take in, you know, everything that's going around you in a very comprehensive way. You have to. I mean, it's sort of a requirement situation that you make yourself aware of what's going on, or allow yourself to be aware of what's going on. But there's never a moment where you can sort of, you know, stick with that at all. You can't, like, stop, say, oh yeah, I just realized that was over there, or what am I going to do next? It's very, very much in the moment, and I think there are real problems with, you know, trying to, you know, I mean, Zazen in a way, it's kind of its own thing, but it has that same quality sometimes of that non-stickiness, where it's just, you know, you don't stop and rehearse things or plan the next breath. It's just, you know, it just sort of rolls along, and you have this very sort of expansive awareness of the situation you're in while you're in it. But then when the bell rings, you don't remember what's happened or what's gone through your head or whatever. You know, is it kind of like that? I mean,
The word I was thinking of was fluid.
Yeah, it's very good. Fluid.
Thank you for your talk. I think it's really great. You know, what you're talking about sort of reminds me of the samadhi of an athlete. Bodhisattva samadhi versus the bodhisattva samadhi of a Zen practitioner. And I think, you know, in athletics, I think, well, what is your intention? You know, as you're moving in the field, it's usually to crush the opponent, you know. Or somehow get something. And I think there's this fine line between that, and that can happen in sitting zazen too. But this ability to have some kind of attention, but also the vow or the intention that's surrounding or supporting. And I'm wondering if you've seen that shift over time, your own intention in your physical world.
No, I really appreciate that question. I think the intention of an athlete is something that would be very valuable for them to explore as they're in it. Because what is the intention? Is it to, like you said, destroy the opponent? Or do they have any idea? But just examining it, mm-hmm. I think, would be so valuable for everything that they're doing in the sport. And through practice, mine has, I would say, my intention has shifted. And I think that's one of the points, actually. This question of physically being, how physically to be in the Zendo, and how does it relate to the rest of your life, and is that it asks, well, what are you doing with your physical energy from day to day, and how are you using it? And for me, I become a student of soccer after, when I was done playing, and so through that, I'm constantly asking myself, well, why am I giving so much time and energy to it now? What? Why is that valuable? What does it mean to me and to the people I work with, and to the world? Is it really worthy of all this time and energy that I put into it? And so that intention, sort of shifting from when you're a player to what I'm working with now, and how it's based in the physical, is really a valuable practice for me, because it forces me to constantly connect what I do with a lot of my time and energy to some bigger idea.
And what is that bigger idea?
What is its value to, you know, to the human race? To the one life that I have. You know, am I making the most of my life, my talents, my, you know, is that my inmost request?